everyone, and welcome to the Culture File debate. We're coming to you live this summer solstice evening from Irie's Town Hall on the beautiful Barra Peninsula in County Cork. I'm Rachel Andrews. Tonight, we're diving into the world of An Cailleach Barra, or the Hag of Barra, a mythic wise woman whose roots stretch back to pre-Christian Ireland. Her legend is one that's alive in the landscape around us here in West Cork, woven into the rocks, the mountains, and the culture itself. After our chat, we have some wonderful music lined up. But for the next half hour, I'm delighted to be joined by three wonderful panelists who each brings their own unique lens to help us understand the Cailleach and what she means for Ireland's history and culture. So I'm just going to introduce our panellists. Emma Verling, here in the middle, is native to Irie's, and she is a researcher continuing the work she began with her late husband Martin, researching the stories of the land and the culture and the social history of the Barra Peninsula. So welcome, Emma.
Good morning.
Gabrielle Fath here on my left is a researcher based at the University of Limerick. And among other things, her work focuses on how older women are represented in 20th century Irish and Scottish short stories and looking, I suppose, at how the motif of the Cailleach informs these representations. So welcome, Gabrielle.
Thank you very much.
And finally, on the far end, we have Jennifer Hearn, who is a multidisciplinary artist currently pursuing a PhD in sustainability and environmental anthropology with the Environmental Research Institute at UCC, and the Cailleach forms, I suppose, part of your research as well, and we'll talk more about that momentarily. But welcome, Jennifer. So I suppose maybe I might start with you, Emma. Maybe we could just give our audience here a sense of who the Cailleach is, a bit of an overview, like how does she emerge in myth and legend, and the rootedness, I suppose, in this area as well of the Barra.
Okay, thank you. Well, Cailleach Barra is described as a mythical old woman in Irish literature and folklore associated with the Barra Peninsula in West Cork. Now, the narrative surrounding An Cailleach Barra derives to a certain degree from Indo-European and old European cosmology, from the pre-Christian world and from the medieval world. An Cailleach Barra herself is unknown outside the Celtic world. She is mentioned in the 12th century in Aisling Mic Chun Dlinna and in the Expulsion of the Daoise. Now, under her earlier name, Bui, B-O-I, father, B-U-I, father, which is linked to the word bow for a cow in Irish, she appears in the 12th century compilation of the lore of prominent places. Now, this particular word, Bui, is interesting because it indicates possibly an origin in the Indo-European cult of the sacred cow. And in Irish lore, there is that idea of a sacred cow, an old cow goddess, living on an island off the west coast called Inishbui. That became Dorothy, no doubt, after the Danes arrived. And then, in the harvest, Molly MacNeil, in her book, The Festival of Lunacy, speaks of a shadowy figure behind the divinity of Crom Dubh in his difficulties with Lu. And finally, Lu wins the harvest from Crom Dubh. And that's as we see her, yeah, right out of that.
Yeah. It's interesting, you're just talking there about cows and harvest, and she's very rooted. I mean, she's very rooted in the land, but also it's interesting to consider, I suppose, how she's interrelated with maybe the plant life and the animal life. And I know that you've sort of done research on her diet and,
yes,
you know...
Okay, I've done some research. I've done some research on her diet. So what she liked to do is she liked to glean for her food. She travelled wide distances looking for her food. And she liked to eat seaweed, salmon, wild garlic, cereal crops, and she drank cow's milk. There's a very interesting little verse here in Irish describing her, how she travelled very far from home here in order to get the best of food. It says, On Rivon Fuija Fear Grinna, on dillis o chuant of clara, on rodan gal a duig on laun, agus an kinnif o vlach famish. That is, clear, clean, mirvan from Whiddy, dillisk from the bays of Cape Clear, bright salmon from the lawn in the north, and wild garlic from the top of Beamish. So that was pretty much her diet.
And why is that, do you think, I mean, why is it important to sort of have this knowledge and this understanding? How does that maybe benefit our understanding of the Cailleach today and maybe our understanding of our own relationship really with the land, if you like?
Yeah, I think it's important to just look back and see what people thought was important way back then, you know. And also when somebody asked an Cailleach why it was she'd lived so long, she said, you know, my head has never touched the air, my feet never touched the ground. I ate when I was hungry only, and I slept only when I was tired. And I got up when I woke up. I mean, that tells us all, gives us a recipe for healthy living. I think it's very important, yeah.
And can you talk a little bit just about her rootedness in the actual landscape? Obviously not far from here there's the stone, which is termed the Hag of Barra, which mm-hmm. maybe many are familiar with. But, you know, there's a lot of stories of her carrying stones, throwing boulders out to sea, etc., etc. Maybe you could chat or yes. tell us a little bit about that.
About the actual rock and the landscape.
Yeah, and how, yeah. like, yeah. you know, I suppose...
Well, again. Yes, in the end she was banished and was petrified to a rock out in Kilcatiran, and she can be seen there looking out to sea with her hair being blown in the wind. Apparently, Saint Catiran was sleeping one day and he put his clothes to one side, and an Cailleach Vera came along and rummaged in his clothes looking for whatever, but an older man was sitting a little distance from them and shouted to Saint Catiran, who woke up and saw her. An Cailleach ran, and Saint Catiran ran after her, caught up with her, and turned her to stone at Ord na Cailí, and there she is ever since. And that's a kind of a sad ending for such a wonderful figure who travelled the landscape, who did all that she had done. It was very much the Christian idea taking over from her natural religion and really controlling her utterly. It's a sad story,
and making
I think,
her
yes.
this kind of sad figure.
In the end of it all, yes.
Yeah. And is it still, do you think that's sort of changing, like how we understand?
Well, I think the whole idea of the Cailleach Vera was overcome by the Christian idea of the patriarchal church, and there's very little left now of the whole cult of the goddess, the spirituality of the goddess, because of that, you know.
Yeah. And that's something I think that you've been very interested in as well, Jennifer. The idea of the pre-Christian understanding of the Cailleach, and maybe how we can think about that in relation to where we find ourselves today.
Yeah, I suppose the way I would see it is it mirrors, you know, she went from being this divine nature's force to, you know, the sad end, or a bitter old hag or a woman. And if you look at how we treat nature and how we've sort of shifted from seeing the land as something as sacred and to be respected, you know, now it's seen as a resource that it's there for our control, and I would see that kind of mirrored in that.
In how we, And so if we start to then have an understanding of maybe the pre-Christian, you know, maybe of the Cailleach as less of this bitter, sort of sad figure, it can perhaps, you know, inform how we see or how we interact maybe with the environment and the landscape today. I'm not sure what you think.
Well, I think it's she. For me, my favourite stories of her are the ones where she's shaping the landscape, and she brings the storms, she brings the winter. She reminds us of the cycles of time, you know, of the cycles of nature, of winter to spring, and she's this sense of she's a force, you know, she's a force to be respected, and almost like a grandmother figure. And I feel like, you know, a way of reconnecting to her in that way is this respectful older elder, I suppose. And, you know, if we had that same sort of respect to the landscape ourselves and to nature and how we treat it.
And that kind of, I suppose, picks up on some of your own interests, Gabrielle, like, again, the
reconfiguration or the re-understanding of older women, particularly in Scottish and Irish literature?
Definitely, yes. I think that there's a lot of negative stereotypes associated with older women in literature, definitely, and the Cailleach trope also sometimes played into that. And so the ugly old hag, this kind of scary woman, even from medieval literature up until now. But it's true in the 20th century, there's writers who are kind of reusing those tropes, those motifs in a more positive way. And so the kind of bitter, religious or judgmental Cailleach is kind of transfigured into a more positive figure in tune with nature and the elements. And that's something that is to be seen, for example, in Scottish Gaelic writer Ian MacEgoin's short fiction and poetry as well.
And how she's more associated with nature in a sort of a hopeful way?
Definitely, yeah. It's ambiguous as well because he writes about women in his own life, his mother, older women in his life. And there's, of course, difficult relationships, I think, sometimes within families. But it's definitely more positive in giving the older woman more subjectivity rather than just portraying her as this archetype that's very rigid.
And you were also saying that the word An Cailleach is used in Scots Gaelic in a kind of a different way to the way it is used in Irish Gaelic.
Definitely, yes. I think Cailleach or Cailleach here in Cork is maybe a more pejorative word in common parlance in Irish, whereas in Scots Gaelic, Cailleach can be used quite positively and used by older women themselves to describe each other. And then there's the male equivalent, Bodoch, which is kind of means an old man or a father figure in this positive sense of the term as well. And it's fascinating to see that the Cailleach folklore here that kind of originates from the Bera Peninsula travelled as far as Scotland and definitely the Outer Hebrides, and that she's so important in the folklore there as well, from Barra to the Isle of Lewis.
Yeah. And why do you think the sort of the different lens through which the word An Cailleach is seen in these different locations? Do you have any sense of why?
It's difficult to say why, it's connotations, but what's interesting with the word element Cailleach as well is that it appears in many, many place names all over Ireland, but also the Highlands, and often with mountains or lakes, in Ireland wedge tombs as well, so it would be the Cailleach's bed, but in Scotland there's Ben na Cailleach in Sky, for example. And there's also many words for nature associated to the Cailleach. So, for example, the word for owl, Cailleach Éiche, means old woman of the night. And there's many birds, and the last sheaf of the harvest would also be called Cailleach. So there's many terms associated to her.
Yeah. Because I know that you're very interested in that as well, aren't you, Emma? The way that An Cailleach is translated to the Hag of Barra.
I have a particular interest in that.
Yeah.
I have a problem with the word hag.
Hag.
And I really think An Cailleach Béarra should be referred to as the old woman of Béarra. Now, if you look at O'Donnell's dictionary, page 172, you will see that Cailleach is translated first as a nun, then as an old woman, and third as a hag. So a hag is not the preferred translation. Now, we all know nowadays the slang word hag is a pejorative term. Who wants to be called a hag, you know? And when I look at the An Cailleach Béarra, and that she represented the goddess of, she was the goddess of sovereignty. She was a vast, benign presence, dominating the physical landscape as well as the elements. She cared for animal, vegetable, and human kingdoms. And she moved endlessly across the landscape. It's impossible to see that kind of an image as a hag. I think the old woman of Béarra conjures up positive images of endurance, resilience, wisdom, kindness, empathy, and compassion, and is a true representation of the sovereign goddess An Cailleach Béarra.
And again, it's kind of coming back to, I think, some of the research that you're all interested really in, how she ended up, how the arrival of, say,
Christianity, then capitalism, the Enlightenment, all had this effect of sort of curbing our idea of the Cailleach and turning her more into this idea of the bitter old crone. And it seems to me that some of the work that you're involved in is, again, re-understanding, really, of how we can think about her and why she ended up being thought of in these particular, through these particular lenses, I suppose. Mm-hmm. Because I know in some of your work, Jennifer, I thought it was really interesting where you were looking at the arrival of capitalism and then also around the same time what happened with the witch hunts and how that impacted on women, I suppose.
Yeah, that was Sylvia Federici's work, The Caliban and the Witch, and she talks about the correlation between the witch hunts and the transition from feudalism to capitalism in Europe. And when we got rid of the commons and enclosed the commons and turned the land for profit, a lot of women were displaced, and a lot of often older women were displaced. And she saw a correlation between that time and the rise of the witch hunts. And I suppose the link I made to that then is you see the stories shifting of the Cailleach from this divine nature spirit or sovereign goddess to this witch or hag or old crone, or you know, you hear in the Lament of Bear, you know, she's that's an 1800 or from 800 AD, that's a poem, and she's referred to as a bitter old woman, you know, so you can see that sort of correlation between, yeah, the denigration of the environment, the commodity of the environment, and also sort of the fall of grace of women in society too.
And the displacement of her role, really, in terms of, the, you know, given what you're talking about, there's a lot of her relationship with nature and her, as you said, a kind of a force in relation to nature and somebody who's involved in gathering food and providing in many ways for the community. It feels like those pre-Christian legends or understanding of the Cailleach, again, are something that's really interesting to bring to light a bit more.
Yeah, it's very interesting as well, that poem, the Lament of the Old Woman of Bera, because it is, I think, the first written attestation we have of her. And she is referred to as quite bitter, but there's also quite positive associations, because there's this idea of cyclicality, of kind of the ebb and flow and images of the sea. And she remembers her youth and, you know, it's a lament, so it is a sad tone, but I think there's quite positive elements to it as well. So it is complex, because it seems that Christianity seemed to coexist with these myths for a while, I think, to some extent. So it's hard to know exactly when there's maybe more kind of 19th century or Puritan ideals coming into play. Because yeah. I think the Middle Ages had maybe more positive representations of women than we think sometimes.
Sure, we also have the role of the Ban Fasa, you know, and the Ban Quinta, and, you know, the role of the wiser woman in society as well. So her legacy existed in the culture too, and still does to a certain extent. Today it's not clear-cut.
I think it was you saying about the introduction of the St. Bridget's Day holiday. I mean, obviously St. Bridget's Day is always, but the fact that it's now celebrated as a national holiday. I think one of you was saying that as well, that sort of continues the or revives a little bit some of the, you know, the dignity of the Cailleach. And so I suppose if we were to think about her legacy, like if I was to ask you all, what would you say about the Cailleach's legacy and how we might think about her, particularly, I suppose, in 21st century Ireland, and how it is useful to think about her, what would, I suppose, what would you like people to have in mind?
The legacy of the Cailleach really is the stories we all tell one another, the stories we all hear. She's in print and in the archives. She's represented in art. And Also, the Orthodox Christian Church, however, obliterated the spirituality of the goddess and really took over, but she does exist in this other way, and just among people in general. And like what we're doing here today now with Lyric FM is a part of that question and answer to that question, you know, that she still exists. And is taken seriously, and people have a huge interest in her. And you referred a while ago to the Unkulach Fair in Kilcartiran, you know, and people leave gifts at that rock, and they go there for one reason or another. They seek comfort, they seek strength. She's still a very, very powerful force in people's minds here in Beara, I would say.
And do you, like, you know, you were saying about her being termed the Hag of Beara. Is that something that continues, or do you think people are calling her the old woman more?
Absolutely. The Unkulach Beara is referred to by almost everybody as the Hag of Beara. And in literature she is, you know, and in folklore. However, things are beginning to change, and folklorists, professional folklorists now, agree that really the H word will have to go. And we will replace it with something much, much better than that. So that's really a beacon of hope for the future. Mm. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm. And just, yeah, to the other panelists as well, if you're thinking about her legacy.
Yeah, I completely agree. I think it's lovely to have role models as well, perhaps, as women that are older, because often our life expectancy in the media is quite short, and our role models are always really young women. So I think having a folk figure who is an older woman is really powerful from a feminist perspective as well.
And somebody who's kind of wise almost.
Definitely.
You know, and has dignity and impact.
I would see her as well as she wise, and also no room for notions. You know? I think she also teaches humility too. And part of her legacy, I feel, is just keeping her stories alive, you know, having these events, talking about her, you know, and learning where she is in the landscape. You know, she's embedded everywhere. There's the Hag's Glen in the McGillicuddy Reeks, the Hag's Tooth. You know, there's a great story of the Hag of Bolas, the Hag of Dingle, and the Hag of Beara. And one of the sisters was wanting to bring a present to the other, and so she brought the Scarif Islands across, and they got wedged in Ivrahuk, and that's why they're there. So understanding these stories of how she's all around us, and you just have to, I feel like she kind of brings the landscape alive. You know, you pass an island or you pass a mountain, but once you know the story of it, you know, it just, yeah. And I think, yeah.
Yeah, there's another lovely story here, just referring to what you've said about the triple goddess there. When the Hag of Beara was working, leaning along the shore one day, she looked across at Ivrach, and she noticed that her sister's cow had gone into the corn. So she shouted across to her sister, who was working as well, and the sister ran down, turned the cow out of the corn. And it went around here when people say, ah, you have the eyesight of the Cunach Beara. You know, it means you have really good eyesight.
Oh,
I mean,
wow.
It's 20 miles, isn't it, across to Ivrach? So, yeah.
And where do you get where'd you go for your gathering all of these stories, Emma? Where'd you find them?
I suppose when my husband Martin first began to research here, then in his work, I began to read in his work, and I also read the book by Dr. Garode O'Cruley, a former professor of folklore in UCC, the book of the Cailleach. That's an absolutely wonderful source, and I suppose, yes, that would be my major source.
Oh, and is that a source for you as well?
There's the Skills collection as well.
Say that again?
The Skills collection.
Ah, yeah, of course.
And there's some great stories in that.
Yeah. Still very untapped, I imagine.
Yeah.
Loads to delve into.
And even just for me, I gathered a lot of what I learned about her just from talking to people. And people, you know, when you have an interest in something and hearing the stories, a lot of them just came to me just through word of mouth and talking to different people or meeting different people that know about her or know a different story. Mm-hmm. So. Mm-hmm.
There's also stories, if you're interested in the Scottish stories, on Tobar and Dulrish, who have the Scottish stories on the Cailleach. It's a website where you can find even songs about the Cailleach.
Wow. Mm. And are they in Scots Gaelic, or are they
in Scots Gaelic, and sometimes in English with a transcription?
Yeah.
And you're a former teacher, Emma. Did you ever teach any of the stories of the Cailleach in your time?
I actually did, because I taught also in the transition year, women's studies in the transition year, and we all looked into the whole, I suppose, all the mythology of surrounding women, and particularly the goddess. So students would do projects on various of the goddesses, and there would always be someone interested in Cailleach Mhéara and do a project on her. So yes, that kept up my interest. And the students were very, very interested. And of course, those were very artistic, the most beautiful representations. It was just a lovely, lovely project. They loved it.
Yeah, I'm sure.
Yeah, they did. I mean, it's they really just, did.
Yeah, bringing all
I
of that
too.
To... I'm sure you did. Because it's not something that, certainly when I was at school, I wouldn't have had much exposure to the stories of the Cailleach. So it's really nice to hear that it's coming back and that that younger people are gaining access to it. Yeah, yeah. And you're involved in translating some of your husband's works.
Yes, Martin wrote three books, Oscailge, on the folklore of Mhéara. Wow. First one was Gorsbrock. The second one was... Beirach Manoa Kind, and the last one, which was published posthumously, is Mios Krishna Gomer. So I chose Mios Krishna Gomer and translated that under the direction of Dr. Christopher McCorrig, who is the director of the folklore department in UCD. So I was absolutely delighted to publish that in 2023, and it's a lovely resource now for all the people in Mhéara who mightn't necessarily know Irish. And at the moment, I'm busy preparing Gorsbrock, which is a book, a really thick book, and stories of one wonderful man called Pádraig Ó Murchú. And in that book, I must tell you, I am going to call on Cailleach Mhéara, the old woman of Mhéara. I'm so looking forward to that. I can't believe, yes.
Oh, that's wonderful.
Yes,
Emma. And who's publishing that? Just
who's
so people...
publishing that? Stuart O'Connell and Blackwood Press. I got the wrong name there, but it doesn't matter. Stuart O'Connell has published, and published them beautifully. And I was just referring to the to Mios Krishna Gomer, which I called... A Cluster of Seaweed. It was illustrated beautifully and designed beautifully by Julian, who is a man from Lithuania, I think, and he did such a wonderful job. So Stuart O'Connell of Blackwood Press, I've got the wrong one, it doesn't matter. But
yes, it's been so great to have the work coming out, and also the work that Gabrielle and Jennifer involved in, you know, allowing us to understand more of the legacy of the Cailleach, which we will be continuing with, obviously, with the live music event shortly, in 2 minutes, with Ambient Ormus, and again, sort of building on the legacy of the Cailleach. We are going to wrap up now. The Culture File will be reprising again next week with the Culture File Comfort Zone, which will be around the theme of silence. So do please make it your business to tune in next week around 6:30, and put your hands together for our wonderful panelists. And thank you all very much.